Okay, I'm going to play a song from Apple now. This is from a cassette put out by Bad News. It's Bad News Cassette Zine number 7 called Do-It-Yourself Puncture. And this is from the New York band Apple, recorded live at the Anthrax when they had a benefit for Bad News and Stop Grow. And as we listen to this, we'll try to get Bob Z on the telephone and talk to him this evening. Shantytown Blues from Apple here on Turmoil. I guess what we'll do is we'll start off talking about your role in Bad News, Puncture, things like that, and then we'll go on to Stop Grow.
Uh-huh.
You know, what you've been doing with that, how that all started, things like that. Because I'm not sure too many people out here really know, you know, what's going on with you, what happened with you.
Yeah, so, well, you know, there's so much going on these days. And Bad News, I started doing that. It's a punk zine, and it sort of developed out of a lot of the spoken word performances, punk-oriented spoken word performances that were going on, and also the punk scene that was happening in around 1985 in downtown Manhattan. And I don't know what got me started into this. Just wanted to record what was going on, you know, because I thought there was a whole lot going on, and I just wanted to put it on paper. And the very first issue of Bad News was like beginning of '86. It had a lengthy interview with Greg Ginn and a bunch of other stuff in there, and it was a lot of empty space compared to the zines that are cut that come out now. The one I'm working on now is number 10, and everything's crammed into it now. It's like trying to get the all the type reduced and all that stuff. So it's a lot different looking. So, you know, anyone who's doing a zine these days, I'd say, you know, try and rip off as much as you can from company Xerox machines. That's the best way to do a zine.
Did Bad News first start off as sort of a showcase of your poems and other poets in New York City who sort of, you know, haven't gotten the recognition in comparison to, like, bands or so?
No, actually, it was more of a smattering of different things. I always, at the beginning, tried to expose stuff that no one else was exposing. And to me, that was the whole point of doing a fanzine, is that you don't want to cover the same old bands that all the fanzines cover, you know, like Circle Jerks and Sonic Youth, you know. And, you know, I'm not putting people down for, you know, wanting to cover those bands, but everybody does, so why do it if everyone else does it, you know? So my whole thing was to try and expose bands that nobody heard of. Part of the difficulty with that is that, you know, who wants to read about a band that they never heard of? So it's hard to get people to read your zine when you're covering, you know, stuff that nobody's heard about. But to me, that's the whole challenge of it. That's the whole fun of it, is trying to expand people's minds. I mean, everybody knows about those, you know, big name bands. Everyone knows who the Ramones are. They've had 10,000 interviews done with them. I interviewed him in the fourth issue of Bad News, but I guess, you know, as a zine editor and you go through it, you want to talk to those big name bands that everyone else does too, you know, but I guess there's a balance in there somewhere. I mean, there's something to be said for putting in a couple of bands into your zine that will help you sell them, will help you sell the zine, but I would say, you know, don't ignore those guys who really need the exposure too.
Usine's one of the few that delves into the New York underground and really supports and promotes bands like that. How does someone in Brooklyn, you know, keep in touch with what's going on in New York City? I'm sure Brooklyn has its own underground going on. Isn't that a lot to cover?
Oh, it's more isolated, you know. It's scattered in Brooklyn. It resembles more of a suburban type landscape in that everyone's kind of spread out in Brooklyn. And the really, downtown Manhattan is the only place where you get a lot of people living in one place and who are physically there. But the problem with that, I mean, I did live there for a while, but the rents going up and everything drove me out of there. And I think the same holds true for a lot of people in Brooklyn and Queens and wherever else people live now. And a lot more people are scattered now than say, 5 years ago. And that's all because of the rents, and we all have Koch to thank for that, and the yuppies who move into the neighborhood and ruin it. So, I mean, that's what that whole riot situation is about, and it's not going to get any better. People are going out every weekend and demonstrating, and I think it's totally justified. The yuppies over in the Cristadora house, that people were knocking on their door late at night, 3 o'clock in the morning, and yelling and screaming at them, that's really just a symbol of people's frustration with the whole thing. You know, me having to live in Brooklyn, other artists having to live out in the boroughs, everyone being scattered, it makes it more difficult to communicate, and like you said, more difficult to keep in touch with what's going on. And, you know, all of that is all because of what the yuppies have done to the East Village, you know. They've moved in and tried to take it over and jack the rents up so that we can't afford to live there anymore. And all the riots going on there are just it represents just 10 years of our frustrations and conditions that we have to live with even now as I'm talking to you, being scattered. And you know, at one time, 10 years ago, everyone lived downtown. There was no problem with rents. And it was a lot easier for everyone to be in touch with each other. And now it's just, it isn't. And that's why you have those riots down there.
Do you think this will have an effect on the underground scene? Do you think the scene will die out because you can't really you know, congregate together as often as you used to?
Well, that's a big question, and that's what everyone's facing. I definitely did think that a year ago. I thought everything was just going to fizzle out. The yuppies were going to take over and jack the rents up, and because everyone was scattered and unable to communicate with each other to a point where you can influence each other and be creative and learn from each other. And when you're scattered, all that becomes more difficult. And yeah, a year ago I thought that's what was going to happen, but all this stuff happening now is real encouraging to see, and I never thought people would get so militant, but, you know, it was the cops that started all of that violence, and there was an article in the Village Voice today written by R.J. Smith I thought was really true. It's like one country under the nightstick, and that really has united people. The fact that all their friends, everyone's, if they haven't been beat up themselves, they have someone, a friend, who's been beaten on. You know, I know a few people who are pretty roughed up, and huge gashes in their arms and black eyes and all this shit. And, you know, when you see that happening to your friends, it's gonna make you angry. And if you aren't angry already, and most people were angry already, and this just really ignited people to the point where you have cross-cultural boundaries being crossed for the first time in 15 years. Yuppies are the enemy, and everyone is united, standing united against them. What you have is like you have pinko commie long hairs, and you've got punks and skinheads and homeless people and Puerto Ricans who don't know what punk is and probably will never care, and all these people standing together and fighting against common enemies, and it's really something else. I haven't seen anything like this in 20 years. So if this whole thing doesn't revive the countercultural scene in the New York area, nothing will. If this doesn't do it, then there's no hope. It's happening now. For the last couple of weeks, the things are really different. You walk downtown, and there's just a different feeling in the air. So, I mean, people are... The day after that riot, it was incredible. Everyone, within three or four... streets of Tompkins, spread out like a circle from Tompkins, everyone was talking about their experience with the riot, and everyone knew what everyone else was talking about, and strangers were just trading horror stories, and it has really served to unite a lot of diverse people. The Yuppies have a lot of enemies now that they didn't have before this whole riot started, so it's really encouraging. It's not going to bring the rents down, not yet, but maybe if there's enough violence and enough bloodshed, no yuppie's going to want to live within 100 miles of the Lower East Side. So, we'll see.
Moving on to another problem you've had with the city of New York, instead of hanging up flyers and posters for shows, and you even started a new group called Stop Grow, called Stop Prosecuting Grassroots Organizers. Why don't you tell us your whole experience with the poster police, as you call them?
Yeah, well, that is what they call themselves. What they are is just a six-man unit of pseudo-police that are paid by the city of New York. They're in the employ of the sanitation department, and it's a special six-man unit that do nothing but look for posters and write down the locations of these posters and give out the summonses at from $50 to $250 per poster to whoever's name is on that poster. And they don't like people say, well, they have to see you putting them up. That's not true. They don't have to see you putting them up in order to hit you with these summonses. They just have to find you. They have to have your name on the poster and then find you where you live, which is very easy for them to do because they have access to all kinds of records that anything. If you rent an apartment, if you own a car, if you have a bank account, they can find you through all those methods. and they do things like go undercover. And in my own case, the way they found me was I didn't even have my name on any of these posters, but they picked the phone number of the it was a punk poetry reading down in on 9th Street, and they called the phone number of that venue on the night of the show and disguised their voices, didn't identify themselves as cops. Talked to somebody there, I don't know who, and whoever it was, they must have asked this person who's in charge of the show, who's running the show, and that person gave them my name. And the next day, I was getting phone calls at my house from somebody who said he was from Sam Ash Music Store, and he wanted to rent me equipment for my next show. Well, it turned out that was a poster pig undercover, and all he needed was for me to acknowledge that I had some involvement with this show. You know, needless to say, me not knowing there was ever such a thing as poster police, I told them all about my involvement with shows, and that was enough for them to indict me. What they did was they came to my house soon after that with a stack of these summonses. It's the biggest joke I've ever seen, the biggest joke of justice I've ever seen. There's over $250,000 of taxpayers' money. That's $250,000 a year of taxpayers' money that's spent to pay these jokers to do nothing but harass people like this. You know, they're going after a person like me and fining me. They originally fined me $4,000 without issuing me any warnings, without giving me any chance to take any of these posters down or anything like that. Just boom, $4,000 fine for a first offense. It's a joke. They do this. I'm not the only one. They do this to upwards of 20 to anywhere from 20 to 50 people a month.
They do avoid, though, the big venues.
They purposely do not go after the big venues because the big venues can fight them and make them look bad in court. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised if places like the Ritz have these guys greased under the table. The Ritz is one of the biggest offenders in terms of posters. Their posters are eyesores. And if you walk around downtown before almost every Rock Hotel show, you see every lamppost on A Street plastered with these posters that the Ritz puts up. And we have a record of every single poster fine that's been given out over the past 3 years. And with all the thousands of posters that the Ritz has put up, they've only received a total of about $200 worth of fines. And that's completely ridiculous when you consider someone like me who was involved with maybe a handful of shows, and I got fined $4,000. There's something very wrong going on there, something very unfair. You know, like I said, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the Rock Hotel crew has these authorities greased under the table.
Now, at one point, the fines against you went up to $22,000.
That's because they found out that I was organizing demonstrations. I was outraged when all this happened, and I wasn't going to sit back and just let them walk all over me. So what I did was I put some ads in the paper, and I got other people together. I found other people who were fined, and I tried to organize people as much as possible. Unfortunately, I found there was a lot of apathy. There was a lot of people who were being fined who didn't want to hear about getting together with other people. They just didn't want to do anything with it. Fortunately, there were some people who did want to get involved and who took over a lot of the organizing work once we started meeting. And we ended up doing about 3 demonstrations outside the sanitation offices. We got a bunch of publicity in the local papers, and Newsday, and even the New York Times covered it. And then some people found out about it, some famous people found out about it and lent their support, and that really helped because they put us in touch with some attorneys who had some interest in freedom of speech issues. And at this point, I have no attorney. I already went to court over this. I'm still waiting for a decision. The court I went to is really a kangaroo court. It's called the Environmental Control Board. And people ask me, how do they get away with this? How can they do this to people? Well, they sort of twist around a statute that was drafted into law a couple of years ago. And instead of issuing a single fine, they twist the words in the statute so it makes it possible for them to fine someone for every single poster they find up on the lamppost. You would think $50 is enough of a fine to issue to someone for postering if you're going to issue a fine, if you must issue a fine for that. But no, they twisted it around so that they could fine somebody $5,000, $10,000 without any warning whatsoever. And, you know, that's what I became a victim of. But they twisted the statute around. It came into being in around 1985, 86. And the person responsible for all this and who we are currently lobbying is a politician. His name is Sheldon Leffler. He's the chairman of the Environmental Protection Committee in the city council, and he is the dickweed responsible for drafting this thing into law. It's a very poorly worded law, and currently I'm working with a city councilman named Steve DeBranza, who's championing the cause of downtrodden people who've been fined massive amounts of money and put out of business by all this stuff. He's come to our aid. He says the best thing to do, and I suggest this for anyone listening to this who has any interest at all in being able to look at posters and get community information on the street, if you want to see that continue, it's not going to continue unless you do something about it. And the thing you can do is write to Sheldon Leffler, and his address is City Hall, New York, New York, 10007. Sheldon Leffler, it's L-E-F-F-L-E-R. He is the person who is right now sitting on the amendments that are being drafted, and he can sit on those amendments for as long as he likes, unless he's pressured. That's why we're encouraging people to write to him, to tell him to get those, to repeal the city posting law. That's what we want to see.
Is Commissioner Brendan Sexton of the Department of Sanitation, he's still involved with this then?
He is the person who is in charge of the poster police unit, and they were quite embarrassed by the demonstrations that we held outside our offices with all the press coverage that it got, and deservedly so. I mean, these people claim that their hands are tied and that they're just following orders, but so did Hitler's people shoveling bodies into ovens. I mean, there's you've got to draw a line somewhere, and if you know something is stupid and ridiculous, then you don't follow those orders. But these people insist on continuing to hand out these massive fines to people, even as they acknowledge that the law is ridiculous themselves. And, you know, that's what they have told us. Yes, the law is stupid, but that's what our orders are, so we have to go out and fine people. And that's baloney. That's just pure and simple. That's horseshit. So we talked to Brendan Sexton. He's not going to help anybody who's been fined. I already asked him point blank. I saw him in person on the street when he was out to get lunch, and I asked him if he would consider a moratorium on future fines, as he himself acknowledged that the law was somewhat worded somewhat poorly. I said, well, why don't you stop fining people? Why don't you stop prosecuting me? And he said he had to go to lunch. One thing our demonstrations did do, it put pressure on Sexton and the sanitation unit to the point where they are only giving out, and I say only with a grain of salt there, they're only giving out $250 worth of fines for first offenders because of the pressure that we've put on them. So there's a ceiling on the number of fines they're giving to first offenders now. But people who've already been fined are still getting prosecuted to the maximum amount. So, there's no relief in sight for people who've already been fined. But even the $250 fines are outrageous in our view, and that's, you know, we encourage people to write to Sheldon Leffler, because he is the person who has the power to draft the amendments to this law, and he is not doing it. He is one of the original dickweed politicians who drafted the amendment to change the posting law to what it is now, back in 1985. So he has a vested interest in sitting on this thing, even though everyone and their brother has been writing to these people and saying we want to see this law repealed. So, I mean, there are people all over the country who are given their support to this cause. It's not an isolated case. There are other cities where this crackdown has happened. It's not as dramatic as here, because New York is the only city that has a six-man poster squad that does nothing but look for posters. But other cities have had regular policemen crack down on postering. So it's a nationwide thing. I think it has to do with the mood of the country and with Reagan and all his idiocy and people's general conservative attitudes that have dominated the country over the past 8 years. And I think there's just a culmination of all that. Hopefully we'll see some change in that soon. I don't think it could get any worse.
Now, I'm sure Stop Prosecuting Grassroots Organizers needs some money to keep it going. Is there an address that people can write to contribute?
Yes, it's definitely, we do need contributions for the Legal Defense Fund. The address to write to is care of Saris Book Marketing, S-A-R-R-I-S, 125 East 23rd Street, room number 300, New York City, New York, 10010. And at present, I'm anticipating having to appeal the guilty decision that's about to be handed down from the Environmental Control Board, because that's all the Environmental Control Board does, is hand down guilty decisions. That's the administrative arm of the Sanitation Department, the same people that give out the summonses. So I've already been through that. I had to sell. I had a $700 automobile that I had to sell to support my lawyer in that case. I also had to sell my guitar and my amplifier. So that money went to pay the lawyer in the initial round of the court case, and that money's been exhausted. So we anticipate an appeal coming, and if everything goes okay, it'll only cost $1,000 to appeal it. But it could cost as much as $14,000.
Now, if someone's going to send, say, a check or something, who should they make it out to?
You can make it out to Stop Grow, STOP-GRO, and that will go straight into the Legal Defense Fund.
And that doesn't just include you, includes others who have been prosecuted?
Well, we are trying to scrape together, at this point, enough for the appeal. And we have to wait and see when that's going to be. We don't know yet. If it turns out that in the unlikely possibility that an appeal isn't necessary, those funds are going to go towards helping bail out demonstrators at Tompkins Square Park. So the Stop Grow is involved in that, and will continue to be involved in that.
In the meantime, you've continued to put on shows for upcoming artists. It seems that this postal police haven't discouraged you at all from continuing to put on shows and promoting poets and bands.
Well, I will not be beaten down, and I will not be discouraged by these authoritarian pigs. I don't care what they do. I'm going to continue doing what I'm doing. And I would suggest to anybody who is going to put shows on in New York City that you do poster, and don't worry about the authorities. My advice to you is, if you wish to avoid contact with the poster police, keep your posters off of city property. They cannot touch you if you poster on private property, and that means scaffoldings, walls of all kinds. Even federal property is okay, like mailboxes and anything not owned by the city is okay. There's nothing they can do, no matter what they say. I know that statute inside out, and there is nothing that they can do if you stay off of city property. And that's also why they haven't touched those movie posters that are all over the city, because those are put up by professional posterers who know where to put the posters, and they always put them on scaffolding. And if you walk around the city, you'll see that that's true. They're always up on the wooden scaffolding in the construction areas, because the city cannot touch them for putting those up on there. And that's what I would suggest to anybody wants a poster for their shows. Don't let the poster police intimidate you. Go out and continue to poster and keep the culture going. Don't abandon the streets because of what you hear in the papers.
You also continue to support the scene by putting out a few tapes every once in a while. The Bad News cassette zine.
Right. Well, there's a few projects, as you said, that I continue to be involved in. That's The Bad News Zine. We're working on issue number 10 now. It should be out early October. Also, the Bad News Cassette Series. We're up to number 7 on that. The latest tape is the do-it-yourself puncture thing. And what that is, that's just an attempt to get the frustrations and the despair and the fire that from day-to-day existence that goes on, to get that out of my own system I put out other people's music because I'm not in a band myself right now. I was at one time, but I don't have the time for it now because I've just got my finger in so many other projects right now. So producing these tapes is sort of like my outlet of getting the music out to people and putting it in a format that makes it a bit different from anything else. That's what I hope to do with these tapes, and I think it's been successful for the most part. Tape number 7 has Nausea, some really good cuts from Nausea on it, that you're not going to find anywhere else. Also Apple, Screeching Weasel, Mecha Normal from Vancouver, British Columbia, and Blowfish and New Republic. So, and that's mixed, it's all mixed in with tracks from the AM radio that are meant to really annoy people and drive them up the wall. You know, interspersed are these scorching punk rock tunes. So hopefully it'll say something to people.
If people want more information about that, they can also write to the Stop Grow address?
Right, same address.
Okay.
And we also have T-shirts available with the logo of a cop beating up a punk who's trying to put up signs for a music event while there's a drunk and rats running around and pollution and somebody getting mugged. And the cop is saying, "What? How dare you desecrate our beautiful city with your ugly posters?" And he's about to beat the punk over the head. We're selling those T-shirts also to raise money for Stop Grow. And they're almost sold out, but if anybody can send like $9, we'll send them a T-shirt.
All right, Bob, thanks for taking the time out to talk tonight.
No problem,
and,
Steve.
You know, good luck.
I really appreciate your interest.
The Statue of Liberty is 100 years old. The mayor's booty is getting cold. He wants to shake it and have a big party. He invited everyone who's rich and arty. If you got the money, you could party hardy. If you got the money, you could party hardy. He invited all the big real estate. They come to his dinners, $1,000 a plate. He invited the multinational banks. They have their ways of telling him thanks. He gives them millions of dollars a year. When he blows his nose, they stand and cheer. He invited some high society. They always serve a cup of tea. They think everyday people are kind of funny, but they need us to make all their money. He invited hundreds and hundreds of cops. Of all his workers, he thinks they're tops. They keep us all right in our place, so nobody smacks the mayor's face. And just for you, if you don't have the bread, he invites you to stay home instead, where you pay more rent than you can afford, while the mayor parties with your landlord. He invites you to subways that do not run. A bus is coming now and then just for fun. Libraries that are always closed. Streets that are always full of holes. Free lunches that smell kind of funny. Welfare centers where they give no money. He invites you to schools that do not teach so many kids into class, just like Brighton Beach. He invites you to night times full of fear. Where selling dope is all you hear. He invites you to heaven after you die. And you got to live low so he can live high. They eat in nightclubs, drink champagne. They ride Mercedes, they snort cocaine. They throw this party every day. We are the ones who have to pay. For this is the party the mayor gives, that the poor can die and the rich can live. The Statue of Liberty is 100 years old. The mayor's booty is getting cold. He wants to shake it and have a big party. He invited everyone who's rich and arty. If you got the money, you could party hardy. If you got the money, you could party hardy. If you got the money, you could party hardy. If you got the money, you could party hardy.
FM Turmoil with music from Professor Louis, and that's a piece entitled Statue of Liberty. Before the interview, we heard from music from Apple with Shantytown Blues. During it, Society by Screeching Weasel, and then Statue of Liberty by Professor Louis ending up the set. That's from the Bad News cassette zine number 7, the new one called Do It Yourself Puncture. And that's available from Bob at, here's the address, care of Saris Book Marketing, 125 East 23rd Street, number 300, New York, New York, 10010. Features music from Apple, Screeching Weasel, Nausea, Mecha Normal, Professor Louis, and Blowfish. and a really fine cassette. A lot of, as he was saying in the interview, news items and radio pieces interspersed, so makes for interesting listening. Have an update. Bob gave me a call Monday night. This was taped last week, in fact, and I talked to Bob Monday night. He was found guilty of the charges that were pressed against him, and he is being fined $3,000. They're going to try to appeal it, but due to the cost of appealing something like this, it just might be cheaper to pay the fine, which is sort of like giving it up anyway, but he is still going to try to fight it. Either way, whether it's not paying the fine or paying the fine and continuing to protest the fine. So you might want to write to him to contribute some money to help him out with that, and also to help Stop Grow, because whatever money is left over from the proceedings will go toward helping free rights movements anywhere. And as he was saying, you know, cases like this are not just happening in New York, they're happening in other large cities too, such as Detroit and other places. So help spread the word. Write to Bob. It's Bob Z, care of Saris Book Marketing, 125 East 23rd Street, number 300, New York, New York, 10010. Send a self-addressed stamped envelope for more information. Check your newspapers and local newscast to see what's going on with that, including checking the Village Voice. And we wish Bob good luck. That's going to wrap it up for me, Steve Kreitzer. I'll be back again next Wednesday night at 10:30 with another edition of Turmoil. We'll be talking with Troy of 7 Seconds. They played in New York a few weeks ago, and we're finally getting that discussion on the air. So stay tuned for that. Coming up after me, Chris Crowley. He'll take you into the early morning hours. You're tuned to WUSB Stony Brook. And that's it for me. I don't even have time to play any more songs, so we're just going to end the show right now. Have yourselves a safe and a good week.
This is Jim Ross, host of the Bluegrass Show here at WUSB, inviting you to step out on the back porch with me each Wednesday night at 6:30. We'll listen to some of the best bluegrass music anywhere. Hey, sit down. Along with some old-time fiddle bands, some western swing, bluegrass. Hey, get out of here. Hey, sit down. Bluegrass news, so join me and my pals every Wednesday night at... Every Wednesday at 6:30 in the p.m. for Back Porch Bluegrass on 90.1 FM Stony Brook.